So under the welcome sweeping influence of the Me Too movement, you found the courage to denounce your sexual harasser. Or maybe you just finally told someone or simply felt validated by the stories of so many others who experienced what you did. But is this enough? Statistics show that 1 in 4 women will be sexually abused or assaulted in their lifetime and will, on average, be up to 4 times more likely to develop depression, suicidal thoughts, PTSD, drug or alcohol abuse, eating disorders, relationship problems, and physical and or mental health issues. And if untreated, will not be able to live free, purposeful, and joyful lives. While Me Too may give you back your voice, is it enough to bring about the healing you want? Will voicing what happened in and of itself repair a stunted life? Can years of self-blame, failed relationships, envy of perceived normal happy women, addictive behavior, or other self-destructive thinking or habits be eradicated by merely verbalizing what happened to you? Well, no, says our guest. Our guest is Carolyn Hauser, and she's a renowned humanistic psychotherapist and family constellation facilitator with an international reputation. And we're going to talk to her about her book, Blossom. It's a 7-step program, 7 weeks of going through the Blossom therapy, which will help you if you have some of these problems. Now, Carolyn says that the key to healing from sexual trauma is integration. In the past, women have been taught to process the trauma. But only through integration and letting go can one truly be released from the full energetic impact of it. Processing merely leaves you with a stored energetic impact that leads to emotional and mental distress. Now, through her 7-step Blossom journey, the integration process is completed so that wholeness is restored and normal, healthy relationships become possible. I think we'll get into the interview after this kind of long introduction. Carolyn came to this country with $7 in her pocket and a dream in her heart, and she started helping other people, and it's developed to what we're going to find out today. Carolyn, it's nice to have you on the program today.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Your book is in 2 parts. One part, your history, and the other part, the treatment plan. So let's talk about the history, and why don't you tell our listeners what you went through prior to learning how to do this Blossom treatment plan.
Yeah, thanks. And in the book, I actually go a little bit further because the work that I now do, part of the work that I do is family constellations, which we'll talk about later, believes that we all already come in with stuff inherited from our grandparents. But so my own journey looked really good. I thought I had a golden childhood and then started developing eating disorders when I was around 10, and it never made sense to me because at that point in my actual life, nothing bad was happening. I was very protected and grew up in the countryside and went to Waldorf school and a private school with lots of arts and self-expression, and so my childhood from the outside looked really good, and then these eating disorders started happening, and I couldn't shake them for 11 years. And during that time, my parents tried a lot of things. They sent me to all kinds of therapies, and nothing really worked until when I was in my early 20s. My mom finally found family constellations and took me there, and I went to 1 weekend seminar, and within 6 months, I was able to heal myself. And then fast forward, I didn't quite know what to do with my life at that time. I was waiting tables and just trying to figure out what to do when I grow up. I had a friend come by one night, and I told him my story, and he said, "Oh my God, if you have been able to overcome eating disorders," and just as a side note, when somebody suffers from eating disorders or any kind of addiction, when you suffer for over 5 years, your prognosis drops significantly, and then when you suffer for over 10 years, in my case, the prognosis of recovery was at 5%. And so I told him that, and my friend said, "Oh my God, if you've been able to do this, you need to learn this, and you need to make this your life work." So I spent my entire 20s learning about healing, going to different trainings. I became a humanistic psychotherapist and naturopathic doctor, and really started learning about the body and soul connection and tons of different healing modalities, and traveled the world, and ended up, I'm from Germany originally, so I ended up in the United States in my late 20s, fell in love, got married, had my daughter, and started practicing, and thought I had it all figured out, and had, you know, I had worked through all my stuff, and I was good to go. And then with my daughter turning 3, that triggered my memories of my early sexual abuse to come up. And so I didn't actually know until my daughter turned 3, which was when I was around 31, that I had been sexually molested as a young child. So I was sexually abused from 4 to 7 from my grandfather, which now we have a good relationship. We've worked through a lot of stuff together around this, and I believe that he's watching from the other side, and he's no longer with us, and really supporting my work. And I also believe that him and I had a pact to have this experience together in this lifestyle, in this lifetime, so that I could come into my power and help others with this. So, and then with me remembering in my 30s, after having gone through all the training and feeling like I have all these tools, I didn't just take myself on a healing journey. I took a whole group of women with me and created a course first. And out of that course, then the book was born to reach more people.
Do you believe that every type and of sexual abuse is a bad psychological issue with every woman that has it?
First of all, I look at sexual abuse more as an energetic issue than a psychological, and we can talk about that in a minute. And then secondly, I do believe it really depends. You know, for one person, something that could really be bad for another isn't, right? It just depends on who we are and how sensitive we are, or it depends on a bunch of different factors, but I don't think there's any way that we can measure or grade what abuse is worse than another. It just depends on the impact that it has on you and your nervous system.
Well, you said that you went through a time when you had eating disorders. Now, the way I look at it, because my practice is an addiction, I see eating disorders as an addictive behavior. Mm-hmm. And I see eating disorders coming from a low self-esteem and a lack of spiritual consciousness. Now, would I be wrong in saying that at the beginning you had low self-esteem and were not spiritually conscious and developed?
Yes, I think I was really, you know, in hindsight, what I can see is that with the abuse starting, I gave away my power, and when you give away your power, you feel like a lesser person, obviously, right? You feel like nothing. And the eating disorders, for me, definitely were an attempt at reclaiming, doing something that nobody else could. You know, I could live on almost no food for, like, weeks, and made me feel like I was superhuman, right? It gave me this false idea of power.
Would you say that particular addiction, a eating disorder addiction, is more likely to be related to sexual abuse in women, as opposed to other types of addictive behaviors like drinking or relationship addictions?
That's a good question. I don't know what the statistics say, but I definitely think that there's a correlation between, you know, women having eating disorders and having been sexually abused or molested. And, I mean, with, you know, we know from other addictions that there often is a correlation too, right? So I don't know if it's more with eating disorders or not. That would be interesting too.
It might, in my particular case, make me more likely to ask the question in a client that presents mm-hmm. with anorexia or bulimia, did you have something like this happen to you in your lifetime?
Yeah. Also, you know, with the eating disorders, for women, you know, when they're young, I really didn't want to develop into a woman, and that definitely was directly related to feeling like if I was going to, I would just become this object or, you know. So there's that, you know, that relation is definitely there, because when you're anorexic, you're just like a stick, you know, you don't look like a, you're not a target, you don't look like a woman when you're really skinny.
Yeah, I get it. If psychologically you don't want to develop into a normal woman, body and mind and everything like that, you might not eat so that you don't develop.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not conscious, you know, it was all subconscious, probably just to, it felt safer to, you know, to,
mm-hmm.
to
yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Be in that state.
So, at what age did you have an enlightening experience with respect to your eating disorder, and how did that happen?
Right before I went to this family constellation workshop with my mother in my early 20s, I had my anorexia morphed into bulimia, and then I went to different phases, and I had just gone to a bulimic phase, and eaten one evening I had eaten a ton of food and was trying to make myself throw up with a toothbrush, and the toothbrush got stuck in my throat, and for a moment that seemed like an eternity, right, when you're not getting air, it seemed like, oh my God, forever. For a moment I realized that if I didn't change anything, I would not have a normal life, and to me, my biggest dream was just to have, I really wanted to have children and be married, that was my dream, and in that moment, it was really clear that if I didn't change something, I would not see 30, and I would never be able to have a normal relationship. My body wouldn't be able to have children, and I just wouldn't be able to have a normal life. And so then shortly after that, my mom suggested for me to try the family constellation, and I believe that because I had that wake-up moment, I was willing to go there and actually try it. Yeah.
There's an incidence of increased death in people with eating disorders, maybe up to 10% of the people actually die.
Yep. And the thing with bulimia is, you know, it's you can hide it really well because you're not that skinny, and you can't really tell. You know, people don't look sick. I didn't look sick at that point. I looked, you know, fine, and I was just suffering in silence. And I know that a lot of people that go to bulimia, they have really this double life where they are really normal and functional in society, and then at home they have this double life.
Right. Well, you've mentioned family constellation and mm-hmm. and therapy associated with that. In the United States, that's not very common. Your book is the first time that I had read about it. Takes us down to a fairly basic level of understanding. What's it all about?
That's a great question. Now, actually, as a side note, I came to the States 10 years ago, and when I talked about family constellation, maybe 1 in 20 people knew about it, and now almost every, like, fifth person I talk about knows it. So it's getting more popular, which is great, and I wrote the book to make this more popular because it is so powerful. So in essence, what the constellation work does is it makes the invisible visible, and it does so with all kinds of patterns. whether it's your inner patterns or family patterns or patterns at work, patterns you have with money, any kind of subconscious patterns can be made visible through the process. And when I say visible, traditionally, and this is the reason why it's called family constellations, it came from family therapy, and you would use representatives, so you wouldn't do it with your real family members. You would go to a facilitator, and it would be done in a group, and you would choose people that you know, strangers basically, that are also there to do their, you know, as clients. You would choose people as representatives for your mother, your father, and whoever else needed to be in your nuclear family, and then you would place them in the room so that that's why it's called family constellations, because you literally constellated, you spatially created a dynamic through putting people in the room in a certain way, and they would relate to each other. And then the facilitator would just go and interview these people, basically people, and ask them how they were feeling, how they were relating to each other. And the interesting thing that happens is that these people who know nothing about you, they have access to information and to the field that stores all knowledge. So through the constellations, what I've learned is that everything that ever could be and everything that ever was is already known. And the representatives, because they don't have any interest in, vested interest in, you know, your story or anything like that, they're able to just access the information that's pertinent for you to heal. So meaning that in a constellation scenario, your mom could say things that, you know, your real mom would never be able to say because her ego would get into the way, right? And so we use representatives to say certain things, and use the client to watch this. And essentially, the way I explain it now is that, let's say you have an unhealthy picture of your relationship with your parents and your subconscious. Then what the constellation does, and you watching it, it's replacing that unhealthy picture with a healthy picture so that you can be free and really function in your life. And it does the same thing, whether it's, you know, with your family, whether it's your inner organs, whether it's the abuse, anything can be constellated in that way. And I highly recommend to everybody to experience it, because even though I've done this for 20 years, it's really hard to explain it, and it's really hard to do it justice just by talking about it. So what I always tell people is my story, so that they can see how impactful it is, because literally it took 45 minutes for the facilitators to take me through the process, and it saved my entire life and completely put me on a different track.
So now, do you do this in clinic with individuals?
I don't work as a MFT or anything. I do this through retreats. So people come and spend, you know, 3-4 days with me in a group. And I do this, and I also work one-on-one over the phone. I've developed a way where I don't need a group, where I can basically represent all the different pieces and can do it over the phone with people too.
What type of illness, either psychological or psychiatric, responds well to this family constellation therapy?
Anything. I mean, anywhere where you feel like you have a problem, whether it's... I've seen people with schizophrenia, bipolar, like real mental issues get better, and I've seen, you know, people solve their marital issues, make more money, be at peace with themselves, heal their physical body. I've seen people completely restructure their businesses based on this modality, so it really is a universal tool for bringing order into something that's disordered, basically.
If someone were listening today and said, well, this might be great, I don't know if it would be great for me, but what would you advise them to do? Come to your website, give you a call? What?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a website. My website is womeninTheFlow.com. on the website, I have a couple free things that people can get. One of them is a tool that helps you heal your own nervous system, which is really important. And we can talk about that a little more. And then you can also Google family constellations and learn more about it on YouTube. There's lots of YouTube videos and articles and books on it, too. And the Blossom book, my book, also, the way I wrote it is so that you can actually learn about those, about family constellations in depth and get a better understanding of what it really is and what it can do.
Now, when you gave the website, I think it wasn't totally clear, so say the website again slowly for us.
It's womenintheflow.com.
Womenintheflow.com, mm-hmm. Okay.
And the book is on there, and you can read about me, and you can get in touch with me also.
Okay. This is interesting. I read through it, and basically what we have here is a 7-week program, right? And each day you have something new that you're going to think about?
Mm-hmm, yeah. And basically a 7-week process, you know, that you could take yourself through in 7 weeks, or you can take it slower, right, if you wanted to.
Now, do you need a facilitator, or can you get it just with you in the book?
You can get it just with you in the book, and you could also do it with friends and use it as a study group. But my intention with the book was to really give people something that they can do on their own. And I also have recordings and things that you can, when you get to a certain place in the book, there's different links where I show you where you can get additional meditations and recordings and processes that, you know, you can't sit there and read and do a meditation. So I've recorded it, so when you come to that part in the book, you can just go to where that meditation lives on the internet and listen to it while you're closing your eyes and being guided by me, basically. So the book is not just a book, it comes with a lot of supplemental tools also to help you.
Okay. There are so many good things in your book that, from a psychological, emotional basis, that people can get help with by changing their way of thinking. When I got to week 7, the last week, lesson for day 2, the title was The 3 Levels of Relationship. And I thought this was very, very interesting and very enlightening. Could you take us through the 3 levels of relationship?
Yeah, and I have to say, this, I did not come up with the concept. I learned that concept from David Data, who is he's really focusing on relationships and especially exploring the feminine and masculine energies. And so what he basically said, and I have gone through this in my own life, so I do believe what he's, I'm resonating with what he's teaching. So he's basically saying, you know, at the basis, the first level of relating is really codependent. When women were dependent on men for survival, and men are basically dependent on women for their sexual needs fulfillment, basically. So it's more of a you give me this and I give you that kind of relationship. So it's not a relationship that's based in pure freedom and love. Then the next level up, and most of us, you know, have worked through those stages, and we've evolved out of that, right? We're not necessarily financially dependent on each other anymore and that kind of stuff. So,
well, you know, this started off in caveman day.
Yeah, yes.
And
yes.
The big, yes. Strong man, the good-looking woman wanted to be his because it's going to protect her.
Be protected. Yeah.
And the big, strong man.
Still in there. You know, it's still in me. Even though I'm really educated and a free-spirited person, I still have that in me. It's really strange. And I know for a lot of women, it's in there somewhere in the DNA.
Yeah, it's been handed down generation after generation after generation. And you still see it today. If you go on dating sites and millions of people do, trying to find somebody, you see those same characteristics showing up, like, if a woman's on a dating site looking for a man or whatever, and she sees a picture of a man who has a great physique, abs, and, you know, he looks like that he could till the earth with a hand unit or, you know, like a farmer or something like that, there's a certain attraction there over a guy who, you know, is intellectual, doesn't have a great body, and this all gets back to that, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's biology. It's survival.
And the same thing goes with men. Men get on dating sites, and they look for women with pretty faces, nice teeth, cute figure, and that's the first thing that will stop them and attract them to a particular woman. They don't go for the more inward things that are probably more important but can't be seen.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is not something that just developed overnight. It's been with us since...
No, it's been...
Men and women on the planet. So you're saying that codependent goes back to, and there's probably a different definition of codependency from a an issue of behavior of addiction than there is from what you're talking about. But
mm-hmm.
you're talking about, I depend on you for this, you depend on me for that, as long as we get our needs met, it's okay. And that's the mm-hmm. first step of relationship?
That would be like the, you know, the bottom level of relationship. And then the next step is what he calls 50-50, where we've evolved and we've learned that we're responsible to, you know, we're responsible and we're capable and we as women don't really need the men to make the money, and the men have learned that, you know, they can also have women as companions and not just for status and to get their sexual needs fulfilled.
Just as a side, I'm watching this stuff on TV every day on the news about how people of power and money can do that. And it doesn't have to be a developed relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, it's not like this particular part of the situation hadn't been around, and it's not still around either.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in the end, it's all about, you know, personal power and what does it look like, and how are you really an empowered person? And love is one of the most powerful forces in the world, right? So when we're still in survival mode, it's really not about love. And then the 50-50 is also not about love, because it's more about, like, equality, which is a step up, right? It's like, equality is a good step up from sacrificing yourself and doing things you might not want to do just so you're protected, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it's not satisfying, because the masculine and the feminine are different. We're actually not the same. And energetically, if we become the same, relationships become very boring, because what makes the relationships interesting, and even I think for people that are in a same-sex relationship, there's always one that is the more feminine pole and one is the more masculine pole, and that's where the energy flow that sustains us really comes from, I think, from one person being more in the masculine predominant. I mean, each of us has the feminine and masculine within ourselves. And in relationship, when they work the best, what I've seen is when one person who is naturally more masculine is in their masculine, and one person who is naturally more in their feminine is feminine, and when they come together and can be themselves, then there is magnetism, and then there's energy flow and creativity, and that's what he calls the third level of relating, where each person can be truly who they are. And when somebody has experienced sexual trauma, it's really hard to be who you're truly, who your true essence is, right? For most women, it's it's not safe to be truly feminine, so we've become more masculine, we've become more hardened and more protective, and it, in my own life, that's caused a ton of problems with men, because I was too much in my masculine, basically, and not enough in my feminine, and it creates a lot of conflict in relationships, so...
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, the more, quote, normal type situation mm-hmm. is that the man is very masculine and the woman is very feminine, but it seems to me that there's a lot of change going on here where men are developing their feminine side and women are developing their masculine side, mm-hmm. and then when they try to get together, it's a different dynamic than mm-hmm. than what we had 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah. And for me, I'm really interested in wholeness, you know, so what do I look like when I'm in wholeness? And for me, you know, I am a woman, so for me, it's my natural essence is more feminine, but I do have a very strong developed masculine because I also run a business, and I like that part. So for me, the journey has been to learn when to allow my masculine to basically lead, and when to let my feminine lead. And before I was really fully healed around sexual stuff, it was very hard for me to allow myself to be in the feminine because I wouldn't feel safe. Right, so that's a big shift from before, that I really do feel that, and I think that's also a big pain point for women that have been sexually abused, because you basically disconnect from a big part of what your essence really is, right, because you feel like it's not safe. And so for me, one of the benefits of healing has been that I feel very safe as a woman, and I feel very safe to be in my feminine, and I know there was a lot of grief around not having been able to have that for a while, and I'm guessing if that's the way for me, I'm guessing that that's a big pain point for a lot of people also.
So earlier on, your primary goal in life was to find a soulmate, have a family, mm-hmm. and a happy life, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, not like that's easy to do, but you did find a soulmate, true?
Yes. But he is my second husband, so I got married I got pregnant actually. I started hanging out with somebody who ended up being the father of my children, and we were together for 8 years. But I knew that he wasn't my soulmate. I'm very happy he's the dad for my children. He's the perfect dad for them, and you know, I wouldn't trade my children for anything in the world. So it happened a little differently. You know, I didn't meet my soulmate and buy the house and then have the children. I had my children, then met my soulmate, and then we bought a house together, basically. But, yep. Mm-hmm.
What would be your advice on how to find your soulmate?
Well, for me, I had to get to the place where I wasn't accepting anything less, right? So I would end up in relationships where I knew that the person was, where something was obvious. So, for example, I would be with someone who really didn't like children so much, or I was with someone who really was spiritually very different oriented than me. And those, you know, a soulmate is somebody where you really have a lot of things in common, right? And so there were signs along the way, and I was the one still having relationships with these people. And it took me a bunch of those relationships until I saw how I was the one creating or allowing these relationships or saying yes to the relationship. So for me, literally within a week when I realized that, within a week where I said, okay, I'm going to hold out for the person where I know that it's a complete match. And so when I was inwardly in that place, then within a week, Paul, my second husband, showed up, and we've been together ever since.
I wrote a book 2 years ago based on thousands of contacts on the internet on finding your soulmate, your match, mm-hmm. and The title of the book, and it's available on Amazon, is Intimate Connections, Romantic Relationships. And it goes and brings people together. Oh, and I ought to say also, subtitle, How to Develop Real Intimacy with Anyone, Anywhere in the World, in Less than 4 Hours. Okay, so the only way that you can do that is by telephone. But I noticed that people on the dating sites were not being truthful. And they were representing themselves differently than they actually were. So I wrote this book to allow people the opportunity to talk to another person that might or might not be a match, and talk about maybe 100 different things that might throw them out of the match or bring them into the match, so that they could see whether or not they wanted to have their first cup of coffee with a person.
That's brilliant. That's really
awesome. And if the people are transparent and truthful, and only the people involved in this program would know that or feel that, and if you don't feel it, then you ought to quit. But if you're transparent and honest and think that that is more important than whether or not you get this person, then it works beautifully. You can find out if you're 99% compatible, 40% compatible, or whatever. And if you take that connection percentage and the other part of it, which is sexual chemistry, which comes later, and then you got both of those things together, you can have a life that's going to go on until you die. So I would just say in passing that you might want to look up that if you are looking for a soulmate, looking for a person, and you don't want to go through all the missteps or mistakes or deviations that you went through and everybody else goes through, trying to find that so that you can save your time, energy, and money and spend it on something more valuable.
And the other thing, you know, with the family constellations, because so the spiritual law states that nothing in the universe was created half. Everything was created complete. That means that if you have a desire for something, the something is already also here. So if you're having a desire for, and I knew this before I met Paul. Luckily, I knew this. So I knew that because I have such a strong longing, that means that this other person, it took me a while to really believe it, but once I got it, it was like, okay, because nothing in the universe was created half, and supply and demand are together, and desire and fulfillment, they're one. That means if I have such a strong desire for somebody, that other somebody has to be there and has to be looking for me also. And so in the constellations, we can actually make this visible because remember when I talked in the beginning about the constellations, how there's a knowing field that knows everything. With the constellation process, you can actually step into yourself and have a representative step into your soulmate and get a sense of who that person is and what they look like and what they feel like. And so I actually had somebody, I train people in doing this because I can't do it for myself. So I had somebody step into his energy and describe him to me before he found me on Match.com. I didn't know how we were going to get together, but I kind of knew several things about him. I knew that he was still dealing with his mom living with him, and he had to kind of like make sure that she would move on before I could come into his life. And I knew that he had a teenage son, and I knew that he had a good relationship with his ex-wife, and I knew that he was like had brown hair, and I kind of knew his physical stature, and so all of that helped. I knew that beforehand. And I was able to know that from the constellation process.
Well, it sounds like both of those types of adventures would work, or
they might. But I really like your book. That sounds like a really, really good tool, in addition to, you know, everything else.
Right. Well, okay, so that was an interesting side to the What would you like them to know about the Seven Steps program that you could quickly go over. I mean, it's too detailed for us to talk about every day of the week for 7 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great material. They ought to get it. They ought to read it. It'll help them and everything. But what could you say about that program that might, you know, let a person know a little bit more about what we're talking about?
Yeah, that's a great question. So generally, I think abuse or any kind of trauma is looked at as a psychological issue, and it's actually not. Imagine when the trauma happens, it's like a house being struck by lightning. And when a house is struck by lightning, what happens to the house is that all the entire internal wiring gets fried and things don't work anymore. And after the lightning has struck, the house is really not functioning. And that's the same with your body and your brain, basically. When trauma has happened, your brain chemistry gets altered, and you're not capable of assessing the more creative parts of your brain, or it's not as easy for you to assess the creative parts of your brain as for a person that hasn't gone through trauma. And in order to create a beautiful life, you need to have access to those creative parts. So the Blossom Journey really helps you gently to come back into your body and to learn a procedure that helps you heal your brain and heal your nervous system and then integrate the feminine and masculine aspects within yourself so that you can feel whole. Because in order to manifest anything in your life, what needs to happen is you need to be in a harmonious, energetic space, in a space where you're allowing things and where you're in resonance with good things. And you also need to be able to feel desire, a thing that pulls you forward. And so for those two things to happen, having the feminine and masculine integrated in yourself is very important. And also having your sexuality healed is very important, because of that your sexuality is directly connected to your core energy and that part in you that knows and can make decisions and be bold and courageous and so forth. And so the seven steps are really geared towards helping you learn to hear the voice of your intuition, and then doing the integration work, and then also taking it into the world and taking it into a relationship, because ongoing, you know, this is ongoing work, and we do it in our relationships. And so the like last step that we talked about is a lot about giving you tools that you can use and then really move forward and have amazing relationships and a beautiful life.
Right, right. Well, once again, let me say that this book, Blossom, is a book that will help a lot of people, and I highly recommend you go get you a copy of it. And so I've kind of got toward the end of this interview. Is there anything else that you would like to say before we quit?
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that they're broken when something like this happened, and I just want to tell them that you can't be broken, because your spirit and your soul, they're not even off this world. And so what's broken maybe, or what's gotten a little distorted, is the connection between your spirit and your soul and your body. And the beautiful thing is that you're the only one that can heal it. So while we don't have power over other people or over other circumstances, we have power over our own energy, and we have power over our own body and how we move forward in creating our life. So I just want to, I'm hoping that my story will inspire you, because like what was shared, you know, I came to this country with $7 in my pocket and not feeling really good about myself, and I have since completely transformed my life and, you know, served thousands and thousands of people and really living my purpose, and it came all from doing this work. And so I'm hoping that I can inspire you, that you start on this journey, or maybe if you're on this journey, take it further, because you can truly have the life that you know is right for you.
We've been talking with Carolyn Hauser for the last 45 minutes or so. Her book is called Blossom, Your Seven-Step Journey to Healing Childhood Sexual Abuse and Creating Your Dream Life. And you just said something that I've got to comment on, because it's so terribly important. Every one of us on the planet, all 7-plus billion, soon to be 8 billion, have a purpose for their life.
Yes.
And if they can figure out what that purpose is and then try to achieve it, they will have a totally different life than if they just do what everybody does, get up, go to work, and go to sleep, and get up and go to work again. So if you can find your passion, your purpose, and everything, that's really going to be a life-changing type of situation for you. And
yeah.
if you'll get my book, Freedom from Addiction 3, it tells you how to find your purpose. And so I think that that would be a great investment also to find out what your purpose is, and that will change your life, just like the stuff in Carolyn's book will change your life.
Yeah, yeah. You need to have the emotional integration first before, in my experience, the emotional healing comes first, and then you can have the clarity around your purpose. At least that's how it was for me, and that's how it is with people that I work with. It's often like once they have done the emotional work, then all of then you know with then they can allow the help and the clarity around the purpose stuff.
Right.
Because then they start feeling better about themselves.
I was looking at your media kit, and there's a question on here that I hadn't read until just now, but it intrigues me. So before we quit. The question is, what is pleasure intelligence? What is pleasure IQ?
That is a really good question. So what I've realized in my life is that we actually all suffer from one thing, and that's that we don't know how to allow ourselves pleasure. And I'm not just talking about sexual, but in general, because I believe that we're all here to have an amazing life, and having an amazing life comes from living our purpose and allowing ourselves to have pleasure in all areas of our lives. And so pleasure intelligence has to do with the ability to allow yourself good things in your life. And most of us have not, you know, for most of us we think we have to work really hard to earn stuff, or the more we suffer, the better of a person we are, and all these kinds of strange ideas, when our freedom lies in learning to allow ourselves to have a high ability of allowing ourselves pleasure. So a pleasure IQ is one's ability to allow pleasure in all areas of your life. And it comes through integrating and letting go of the negative traumatic experiences and healing your nervous system, because you do need to be in your body, and you need to be in a place where you can actually stop punishing yourself. Like with sexual abuse, there's a lot of shame and guilt. And so as long as you're stuck in shame and guilt, you're going to not allow yourself to have a great life, because subconsciously you're going to keep punishing yourself. And so pleasure intelligence has a lot to do with letting go of that and then learning to allow yourself to have the things that are truly right for you.
And the Blossom treatment plan can do that for you, right?
The Blossom Journey is the first step, and my upcoming book is actually the Pleasure IQ that really helps you then. The one of the steps to have a high pleasure intelligence is really the emotional healing. So it's definitely, the Blossom Journey is the beginning, and then the Pleasure IQ, which is my upcoming book, is a continuation of that journey.
Well, I hope when the book comes out, you'll give me a call and come back on the show, and we can talk about that.
Yes, I will do that.
Okay. Well, our guest today was Carolyn Hauser. The book is Blossom, B-L-O-S-S-O-M. Subtitled, Your Seven-Step Journey to Healing Childhood Sexual Abuse and Creating Your Dream Life. Go get a copy of it. Carolyn, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.